Amen. Well, probably don't have to go too much into why we're having this night, but just a reminder that honestly, our personal experience over the past 15 years of ministry of how big and how devastating this issue can be, it's honestly becoming even more and more important as we become more and more connected to technology. And it's really hard to stay on top of things, and even some things in here might be outdated. But even so, we just want you to know that there are things out there. So even if something isn't quite exactly still accurate, it should give you an idea of like, okay, so there are things out here that work like this, and I can use it this way. So we're going to spend a lot of time using some principles. Many of them are from this book, The TechWise Family. This is a great book. It's relatively recent. And you know what's interesting about it is that the principles in it are very general and easy to use. They're not necessarily related to one specific technology. You'll hear us mention a few of them during this talk tonight. But you can also, there's one copy in the church library, and you can also just buy it for yourself. It's a quick, easy read, and we recommend it. So according to a Barna study, technology is one of the main reasons that parents believe that raising kids today is more complicated than it's ever been. So the average, at this point of our research, that kids spend on screens of different sorts during the day is 7.5 hours. And some of that might be TV, some of that might be phones, some of them might be, at this point, might be online school. And much of that time will be spent with possible exposure that is only like one click away. So our goal tonight is to inform you, to give you some general principles, and to also hopefully practically equip you to do something about it.
So it's hard being a parent these days. We sympathize with you. It used to be that, you know, a generation was about 40 years or so. But now a person will experience a generation's worth of change in about 3 years. So, you know, your 15-year-old almost grows up in a different world than your 12-year-old. You know, whereas you might have somebody graduating university right now who went through their preteen years without Facebook and Instagram and maybe even a smartphone, whereas your preteen would never know a world without that. So things change really quickly. And some of tonight is going to be a little bit hard to hear and a little bit uncomfortable, but we have to let you know how serious of a problem and issue this is. And we're mainly going to focus on pornography only because that's the biggest problem. But everything we say tonight and the solutions or ideas would apply to really any area, whether it be online gambling, whether it be online predators, bullying, chat rooms, all of those sorts of things, and really just overall phone and screen addiction, which is a growing problem in our society, which leads to all kinds of anxiety and depression and other issues. So this problem is way bigger than kids and teens and students, but our focus tonight is protecting kids because they're the most vulnerable, and it's the key age where exposure can begin and then lead to problems. So we're going to break tonight down into three sections, and if you didn't get the handout, they're on the back table there, and there's here, and we have plenty, so you can have two per family, that's fine. And if you want to take some for some friends, that's fine too. And we'll make a PDF available to anyone who wants one, because they have links on them too. We're going to talk about the statistics, so it's kind of big picture, then some stories, small picture, and then solutions for actually protecting your family and your home.
And if you're not a parent with small children at this point in your life, thanks for being here. We're really glad that you're here, and we pray and hope and know that there will be points that the Lord will use you to bless other people, whether it's people in your family and grandchildren, that sort of thing, but there might also be people around you that are looking for this advice. And I see parents all the time asking, like, what do I do with this or what do I do with that? I'm not sure whether to give my kid a phone, that kind of thing. And while, of course, you don't have to come down with the hammer of power, at the same time, you may be more equipped, hopefully, after today to give some good suggestions. All right, so Joseph so kindly gave me the job of doing the statistics, which I just love. And I looked through them and I was like, I've got to be able to skip some of these. And I realized that you probably need to know all of them. So just get ready for some... Yeah, it's a little heavy. So 9 in 10 boys and 6 in 10 girls are exposed to pornography before the age of 18, and some stats are as high as 90% of kids 8 to 16 years old have been exposed to porn. And of the youth that have seen pornography online, 94%, this we shared this last week, had seen it by age 14. So that's why these early years are so key. You might be surprised to find that the access might be there, or it might be there at a friend's house. The average age of first exposure, and probably is getting younger, is 10 years old. 40% of teens, and this really surprised me, have created a sexual image or video of themselves, and a quarter have sent this to someone else. This is a problem of epidemic proportions, such that even like governments are trying to figure out how to battle it. They're deeming it a public health crisis, and it's not just men. But 60% of websites are porn, and 35% of all internet downloads are pornographic. Sex is the number one reason that North Americans use the internet. And sadly, and it should anger you, it angers me, the porn industry aggressively targets young people. Just like any advertising industry does, you know? My son likes to wear Nike things for golf because he thinks that's what golfers wear, right? Because Nike's targeting and saying, like, trying to start at that young age, right? Well, the largest consumers of porn are boys 11 to 17 years old. And porn websites, they're so aggressive. They've incorporated at least 10,000 of the most common words used by children. And unfortunately, it's probably worse than you might expect what they're viewing. It's hard enough to imagine, someone seeing something that's, you know, reserved for the bedroom. But about 70% of teens have seen group sex, 60% have seen same-sex intercourse, and 30% have seen sexual acts involving even sexual bondage, and 15% have seen rape or sexual violence or child pornography. So this is all right at their fingertips, and I'm going to pass it on to Joseph to deal with that.
So, I mean, just imagine if we sent a bottle of vodka to every single home in Canada, it would, on a regular basis, it would eventually result in just a wave of alcoholism. Well, that's what's happening with the pornography industry, that it is basically delivered to our doorsteps, to our homes on a daily basis, and aggressively put out there, particularly to young people. And it's destroying lives and families and marriages, and is restricting individuals from realizing their full potential as human beings and as disciples of Christ. Therefore, it must have the church's attention. So that's sort of the big picture. I don't think we had to convince you it's a problem, but it's possible. So that's kind of big picture. It's big problem. Sometimes it's even worse than we realize when we get these statistics. But let me just give you some small pictures so that you know, like, it's actually more than statistics. So these are more individual stories highlighting the need for parental involvement. And, you know, I wish I could say these are just statistics, and I could say it doesn't really hit home for families or in our churches or with Christians, but it does. And there's a handout there, Trevor, on the back table. Hi, by the way. So we're just going to share from our, you know, decade or so in youth and young adult ministry. And part of the problem is simply that porn has just become so normal. In the research printed in a psychology journal on youth exposure to pornography, researchers concluded that exposure to pornography on the internet can be described as a normative experience. So students are so desensitized that they barely blink. And it's amazing, and I'm sure Thomas sees this now that he's on these media things with kids, it would just amaze me the things that kids, Christian kids, would post, basically softcore porn on their Facebook profiles and Instagram and these sorts of things, not even really understanding that it's wrong, right? Just so desensitized. And the way even Christian kids and youth in youth groups would joke about sex, that there was just nothing sacred to it to them. And that's kind of the cultural battle that we're fighting. So let me just give a couple of real stories from our experience as pastors, particularly youth pastors, stories of Christian kids from good homes with good parents. So all of those are in place with each of these stories. We had kids, you know, who were viewing porn several times a day, several for 5 or more years, and had never told anyone, including their parents. Kids would tell us how they would be up till 4, 5 a.m., losing sleep, that their grades were suffering, that it was just overtaking their lives. We've had youth who have admitted that they've performed sexual acts over the internet for others using a webcam or watched others in chat rooms. Sexting was always a big deal, working with youth, teens taking cell phone shots of each other in various states of undress and sending them. And unfortunately, we've had situations extreme as a young girl who was a good Christian in really every part of her life, but kind of had this completely separate life on the online world, and who was meeting strangers regularly for sex, and yet had a Christian boyfriend whom she would barely make out with, and yet had this kind of alternate reality going on in her life that was so different than actually who she was, but it just got caught in this web. And so, you know, and some of these people we've got professional help and counseling for and different things, because Hannah and I are far from professionals in this area. But it happens in so many different ways with so many different types of kids, including ones you would just never expect. And it happens on webcams and phones and Instagram, on PlayStations, on game consoles. Any wired or connected device these days basically has the potential for something. And in fact, just I was learning things from Thomas this week. He was telling me, like, did you know, this happens. I see this all the time with kids. And I was like, no, I didn't. Those are new things. I didn't know, like, these new things are popping up that actually still aggressively do some of these things. So I've just known kids who are just completely different people in the online world and admit that they are, that it's kind of an escape, right? So, you know, they're talking or doing things with some stranger in Russia that they would never do with their friends, right? But it's kind of a complete different reality. And then just add the anxiety that social media leads to, right? I mean, you've heard of course, FOMO, the fear of missing out, and what this does to teenagers as they see all the things their friends are doing. But so much research now is coming out on the implications of this much use of devices. So what can we do? Both about the big picture, these statistics, and the small picture, stories of how this hits home. So the main part of tonight is, of course, to talk about this last part, the solutions for protecting your family and home.
All right, so like I said last week, it's time to take a deep breath. Like, there's good news here, too. We had to start with the bad part. The problem is not using technology, period, full stop. The problem is using it without thinking about it, without making strategies around it, and pausing to think about what to do with it in our lives. And this isn't just related to pornography, and it's not just related to kids. So all of these principles are going to totally apply to our lives, and as Christians, we should not just blindly jump into something and just never pause to think about how it's changing our lives. Hopefully, it's at least obvious at this point to parents or people who take care of kids that you can't just ignore this topic and hope that it's going to work out. That would be like taking your kid and dropping them off in a huge city like Hong Kong or Toronto and giving them no guidelines and no instructions and letting them wander around without any supervision. But this often happens on the internet, whether we know it or not. The kids are just free to travel the online world and meet whoever they want without supervision. So we're at a similar time with technology, and now we need to ensure adequate safety for our children. Thankfully, there are a lot of people who care about this. They may or may not be Christians, but they understand that this is a problem. And so there are a lot of techie people who care about this and can actually help us in this way. So we're going to start, actually, before going into that, we're going to talk about the big picture, and a lot of this does come from this book by Andy Crouch, The TechWise Family, that I mentioned at the beginning.
Yeah, so, you know, you wouldn't just take your little kid to the swimming pool and drop them in the pool and without any swim lessons and say, figure it out, kid, right? But that's kind of what we're doing when we're just kind of handing them a device with no guidance, with no kind of understanding of how we're going to do this. So these are, I think, 7 or so principles, and we've written the principles, but a lot of it's kind of taken from principles in this book. So number 1 is promote open communication and safe conversation. Basically, you know, the number 1 thing is be involved. Larry Rosen, a professor of psychology at Cal State University and author of several books on adolescent media usage, says that the consumption of media was predictive of psychological and behavior problems, and that parenting style was directly related to healthy online behavior. So parents who set clear limits and boundaries but did so with warmth and consultation with their children, so not just laying down the law but actually talking to them, those kids were less consumed with media, possessed higher self-esteem, and were less depressed and had better relationships with their parents. So having open conversations with your children and reduce the shame and embarrassment by creating a safe, non-threatening, and understanding environment. Over and over again, experts say that communication is every parent's first line of defense when it comes to keeping their kids safe from online pornography and sexual predators and cyber bullies and all of those things. And then internet software is the second, but communication is really first line of defense. So get involved in your kids' lives. Be aware, ask questions, monitor activities. And one of the first questions I would often ask a student when they would come to me and share is, you know, have you told your parents? And I'm not kidding when I tell you that often I would get this answer: I wish I could tell my parents. I would like to tell my parents, but I just, right? Like, there was never an opportunity for a conversation. They would say, I wish my parents knew. Like, in a way, it would be a relief for them that they knew these things were going on. So reduce the embarrassment and open up communication. Saying, hey, if you see something that makes you feel uncomfortable, ashamed, you can always tell us. We're not going to be mad at you. You can talk to us. We understand those sorts of things. So nothing can make up for intimacy with your kids, a close family of trust and communication. And, you know, prepare your kids for possible situations they might face. And unfortunately, you just have to assume the worst. So walk your kids through situations, right? So, you know, hey, you're at a friend's house. A couple of your friends say, hey, let me show you this video. It's awesome. What are you going to do? Right? If you haven't walked your kid through that situation, they're not going to know what to do once they get in it. Or, you know, you're at a party and your friends start playing some sort of sexual game and you're chosen to participate. What are you going to do? I remember that happening to me in grade 5. I had no idea what to do. So, you know, nobody had ever mentioned to me or taught me, you know, what I would do in these kinds of situations. And, you know, of course, hopefully they don't get in these situations in the first place, right? Like, hopefully we know enough about our kids and where they're going and what they're doing and who they are. I personally didn't really have that situation, but it could happen somehow. You just don't always know, right? So you have to walk them through these situations.
The next point is to prioritize real and embodied activities and relationships over digital ones. And as I say this, there's no like black and white answer here. Right now, my kids are in my office and they are watching a show because they can't be in here right now. And if you know any babysitters, let us know. But there's a reality where that's something we need to always be thinking about. So even though I had to make that decision today, I don't love to make that decision, I know that when they're done with that tonight, like, I need to be on. I need to connect with them. I need to play with them. I need to be there and looking at them while I'm feeding them. So studies are showing that the upcoming generation is really dangerously lacking in social skills because they talk to more people online than they do in person. So make sure you're spending physical time with your family and not just physical time with your family staring at a screen or in digital communication. We know that Facebook and other sites can promote a bit of a selfish, comparing mentality. every site has its flaws, right? And we know we can be obsessed with cultivating our online image rather than cultivating our hearts. And let's be honest, it's not overall a great environment. There are good things we can do with it. We can use it strategically. But sin is sin, and it shows up in the virtual world just as much in the real world. And it's still sin, right? Whether it's online or in person. So viewing or reading or participating in gossip or arrogance or jealousy or other sins are still sins, even if they're online. You can't be a Christian everywhere else in your life, but just not online. And even at their best, social media, like all media, they substitute distant relationships for close ones. So this is a really interesting image that has stuck with me. A 15-year-old overcome by anxiety late at night might once have had no choice but to turn to her parents down the hall from her bedroom, or to God, who is even closer, for help and counsel. But now she can send out a blizzard of text messages to friends who completely understandably feel obligated to respond, and they feel gratified by being needed by their friend. But this text and emoji support is thin, and the kids, the friends, don't have actual unconditional love, and they don't actually know what's best for the kids. So they get this echo chamber of teenagers with their limited perspective, and it keeps this whole circle of friends awake late into the night and robs that 15-year-old and her parents or older siblings or whatever of an in-person conversation. That could be painful, it could be challenging, it could be reassuring, it could be comforting. So those are these realities. Even if she's not looking at anything dangerous, she may be turning to that for comfort instead. One of the commitments in Crouch is we create more than we consume. We need to aim to fill the center of our home with things that reward skill and active engagement. Not that there's never any time for like enjoying a movie as a family, but be outside, do real things together that are good for our bodies and souls. And try to be present in moments. You know, we can't do everything right. But, you know, when we're, for example, out with our family on a vacation, maybe we don't spend the whole vacation taking pictures. Maybe we take a few so that we can be more present with them. Choosing not to use our phone at key moments with our family sets a huge example because our kids are watching, and I'm so guilty of this. I've been much more aware lately, but it's really something to be aware of. So one thing before we move on, I hear this all the time. I just really want my kid to be computer literate, to know how to use technology, because that's the world that we live in. Guys, computers are so easy to use these days, and phones are so easy to use these days. They make them so intuitive so that you'll use them. I don't think you need to worry about that. I think just the natural things that they have to do along the way, or having FaceTime with grandparents, they'll learn the skills that they need. They'll get a sense of it. And if there is something that's different from them, it's going to be a good thing. If nothing else, what good does it profit you if you gain all the skills of the whole world and you're very street smart, but you lose your soul? Which is a little dramatic, but at the same time, it is also possible.
So the third tip or suggestion is to practice as a family technology-free Sabbaths and fasts. And the younger you can start this with your kids, the better. If it becomes a part of their rhythm. So parents need to model this. Crouch says, we're designed for a rhythm of work and rest. So 1 hour a day, 1 day a week, and 1 week a year, we turn off our devices and worship, feast, play, and rest together. So technology gives us leisure, but it's more of a fruitless escape from labor. It's rarely true rest that technology offers. It doesn't necessarily restore our souls or our relationships with others or with God. So, each day, we know about half of teens check their phone as soon as they wake up, first thing in the morning. So we can have, you know, some family rules or whatever that make that not possible, where we, you know, can limit computer and phone use. And we're going to show you some programs that can do this. Crouch says follow the double-digit rule, meaning no phones or screens before the double digits, before 10 a.m. or after 10 p.m. We've often used in our family kind of 9 to 9. So I have a program on my phone, and I've used this in different seasons, where, you know, Hannah can set when I'm allowed into it, right? So
permission.
Yeah, with permission. So I'll be like, hey, doesn't do it without permission. That'd be mean. But I'll say, hey, let's go back to that 9 to 9 thing, right? Where I can't get into my phone from 9 p.m. to 9 a.m., right? And when I do that, I'm like, oh, this is so nice. Like, you know, not to be on my phone before I fall asleep and not to look at it when I wake up or whatever. And then sometimes we go on vacation. I'm like, hey, can you take this off or whatever? But so there are ways you can do that. So each day, each week, having a day or a half day or at least an evening where you take a break from all media devices as a family. Some families have like a basket. They put them all in, your iPads, your phones, and stuff like that, and they know that this is your Sabbath evening, and we're not going to touch our devices tonight, and we're going to rest from the media world. So whatever might work for you in that, in kind of setting that down. Sometimes what I'll do, I think it was this weekend or whatever, is I'll actually power down my phone Friday night, and then I may not restart it till Saturday afternoon or something like that, and it just gives me at least a little bit of a break where my phone was like actually off and not even accessible at that point. So each day, each week, and then each year, take a break from social media accounts and email and phones for, you know, 1 or 2 weeks a year, which could be as easy as, you know, vacation if your job is very heavy, dependent on that, where you can let go of that, or some other time. And when you do that, see what you notice about yourself, because I notice this with myself. I'll start to, like, I'll get a little antsy, right, if I'm taking a week off from it, you know, and I haven't read that sports blog that I read every day or, you know, whatever. Like, you start to notice things about yourself, which is really healthy and really good to start to think, wow, this has more control over me than I realized that it did. But you're also modeling this for your kids and helping this. So don't be legalistic about your technology-free guidelines. These are meant to improve your life. We're not trying to add, you know, frustration to your life. But, you know, you might think, well, if we did these things, you know, we won't be like other families. Well, that's kind of the point, because it's not going well for a lot of other families. And, you know, being countercultural is hard sometimes, but maybe necessary. So, you know, not giving your kid a phone until they're a teenager is very countercultural these days. That might be the best decision, though. You know, only letting your kids stay overnight with families that you really, really, really know and trust. You know, that's maybe a hard decision to make, but one that you might need to make. Having very little television and video games might make your kid a little bit less popular if they don't know what other kids are talking about, but it's worth their soul and the health of their soul. So, you know, it's intentional that these first three suggestions that we just did are really all about the whole family and healthy practices rather than just protecting individual people. This is more like a lifestyle we're talking about, values, kind of a worldview. And the reason for that is family life and porn addiction can actually be related. So Crouch says, the best defense against porn for every member of our family is a full life. A life of love, a healthy family. A home can equip all of us, he says, with an immune system strong enough to resist pornography's foolishness. So, you know, shallow or broken family relationships, feeling like life has no significance, having little experience of joy in life, or just being bored and not knowing how to live an embodied life and to create, these things can help lead to or fuel porn addiction in kids' lives. So as in all areas of parenting, in the area of technology, your child will have times eventually where they're going to have to make decisions, of course, outside of your control. And we know that as they get older. And in fact, your control will and should become less powerful as they become adults and have more free will. But hopefully, those years of intentional parenting in these areas, following these principles we've been talking about, will make it more possible for your child to then say no in situations of temptation, or to confess and get help when they fail, because hopefully they are reasonably healthy growing up in a certain kind of home and have been kept from unnecessary damage to their moral frameworks and have a sense of goodness, of real life found in following Christ. But let's move into a little bit more of the kind of nitty-gritty now small picture, things you should do in your home and with your family.
Before we go there, I just want to just reiterate that line about living a full life. I know we can't be perfect as parents or grandparents or people involved with kids, but my goodness, being able to teach your kids to have fun that doesn't include TV, being able to do things together that they enjoy, being able to have skills or hobbies, like, that goes a long way toward filling that sense of what are you looking for when you go to porn or whatever it is on the screen. You're looking for something to fill. But if you're not, if you know how to fill that other ways, you're going to be a lot more prepared. So I really love that. So the first one is publicize all online accounts, passwords, and device usage within the family. So it's really good to just start monitoring the kids' online activity as soon as a child is given access to it. So, you know, for Anya in my family, she's 7. She doesn't have internet access, but she has audiobooks. And I still go and check the device that she uses every once in a while, make sure she's not doing anything else on it. And I tell her that too, you know, this is what it's for. I don't want to see you do anything else on it. I don't even want to see you searching the library database. I just want you to be listening to your books, putting it down, and then listening. And so those kinds of things, when they're starting to get introduced, are really important. Parents always have the right, and grandparents too, to look at their kids' devices. That's countercultural to say, but it's very important, and it is our job. We do not have to be asked. We don't have to ask, but we do have to be kind and explain to our kids that we're trying to keep them safe. If mature adults struggle to handle the temptation that comes with the internet, there is no way that teenagers and kids can handle it on their own without some help. So privacy for kids and teens on phones, or really phones for kids, sorry, I'm going to be a little bit annoying here, it's really overrated. You should really have total unhindered access to your kids' devices and accounts. And even if you don't have time to do that all the time, at least do it regularly. So you can be friends with your kids on Facebook. You can check what they're doing on their computer at all times. You can follow them on Instagram. Just depends on what it is. You might just not let them on Instagram at all. 44% of BC parents who have kids 8 to 16 are worried that their child was a cyber bully. You shouldn't have to worry. You should be able to know. And there are ways that we can do that. We can talk to our kids about things like the permanence of Facebook posts and what they put out there, and be upfront with the kids about what technology we're putting on there, what software. We want them to be able to trust us, not the internet and not others. And of course, with younger kids, you might not give them as much detail, but they know what evil is. And you can say, there's some stuff on the internet. I don't care if you want to frame it in terms of violence. There's scary stuff out there I don't want you to see. And I just want to make sure that you're safe. Another point is to plan your use of spaces and use technology in a purposeful way. So of minors who have seen pornography, about 60% saw it for the first time at home. I think it's really important to very much consider not allowing devices in bedrooms. So computers, phones, chargers, this depends on the age of your kid and the layout of your house. But as much as they might feel persecuted, it's best to have it in a public space or put them away before bed. So a lot of kids, over half of kids have a personal computer, mostly in their rooms. And I know this is challenging for online schooling, so it might have to be a creative setup. And phones and that kind of thing. But late nights is when kids are doing a lot of this, when they're a little bit more, their boundaries are down, their filters are down, and they're tempted, and they're bored, and there's everyone else in their family has gone to bed. But there's a sense of which, if you keep it in a space, you know, in my family, we had our computer in the living room, and or you had to do your work in the living room. And that was the rule, because the parents had to be able to know what was going on. But more than this, we need to be able to model a different way of living, that the kitchen is the center of the house, you know, hanging out or cleaning or cooking, or the dining room is the center of the house, it's a space to connect, or the living room is the center of the house, talking or playing games or reading books or doing projects. You might have an art table for your smaller kids, but the TV is not the center of the house, and you can even move it to a less comfortable location to really bring that into focus for your family. So the car is another example. And when we were shopping for minivans, we just got a lot of people trying to upsell us an entertainment system. And I can see that. I'm not going to say, like, you're a bad parent if you have an entertainment system. But I said, you know what? I want to be able to play music in the car that we can sing together. But other than that, unless we're taking an 18-hour road trip, like, I don't need to have videos in my car. Because a car is actually a brilliant spot to connect with your kids. So when I say using technology in a purposeful way, when you are using it, either use it in a way that, like, gives your kids a babysitter and you know you have to get something done and you're going to connect with them afterwards, like I'm doing right now, or use it in a way that's fun for you. Like, you know, if you have a family movie night, maybe you don't need to have a family movie night every week, but if you have a family movie night, be there, be present, you know, pull the jokes into your family, eat together, enjoy your time together. Or, you know, the same thing could be true for music. Instead of kids in their car, each having their own little personal iPods or whatever devices and have their own headphones in, maybe you say, you know, take turns on who's picking the music and you listen to it together. My family, I'm going to get in trouble for saying this, but we're super into Hamilton. I don't know. Have you raised your hand if you watch Hamilton? Okay. More disciples, Thomas. We can make more disciples. There are some inappropriate things in this musical, but like there are 46 songs and we sing them as a family all the time. There is nothing that me and the kids love more right now than singing those songs together. We get so much joy out of it. Like, we try not to listen to it in order so that we, when we do, it will be fun. And they sing their hearts out. Like, we drive to Nanaimo, I'm like, guys, do you want to listen to Hamilton? They're like, yeah! So you can use technology in a good way. It's not all bad. It's just something that it can bind you together or it can separate you. Kids need to learn how to handle slow moments, daily challenges, mom making dinner, without having to resort to technology. I'm not saying that, you know, you can't use it every once in a while in a tough time, and I cut my corners that way too, but like, if every time you're making dinner, you put on a show, they'll learn that like, okay, when I'm a little hungry and I have to wait for something, I need an escape, right? But they see us pulling our phone out every dull moment, waiting in line or at church or brushing our teeth. Oh my goodness, I'm so guilty of this. Did you write this? Yeah, you did. Taking it into the bathroom at home. I never do that. Then how will they learn? How will they learn not to crave distraction at any point? Because life is not about ease or, you know, avoiding boredom. It's about creating things as we go and listening to the Lord and having that space for reflection. So when we overly consume distraction, it's not just unsatisfying. It's like sickening, like if you eat too much junk food. So we can use it in a purposeful way, using screens in a place that's important, and using screens in a way that's important, that's helpful for you.
Yeah, hopefully you're getting some of these themes of how important the modeling is. And just, it's about pausing and reflecting and actually realizing how kids pick up on this, right? So sometimes I think that, like, if they just see me pull out my phone when I'm bored and lay down on the couch, and like, that's going to eventually become their habit, right? Because, like it or not, we become like our parents. And I can think of habits that my parents had that I have now picked up, right? And Hannah often calls me out on them. She's like, you do that because your dad does that, you know, like, where, you know, but you just learn some of these things. So if you're waiting in the line at the grocery store and your impulse is to pull out your phone, your kids are going to see that and they're going to know that. And that's eventually going to, they're eventually going to think that's what they need to do too in those kinds of situations. So that modeling is so important. So this tip number kind of six of these more detailed ideas here is protect all digital and media devices. Hopefully this is a bit of a no-brainer, but a recent anonymous survey at a Vancouver evangelical church found that 16 out of 18 men between the ages of 20 and 30 have asked God to help them stop looking at pornography, but still found themselves going back to it. And that's a very common kind of statistic, right? It's not that these people, it's not that people aren't trying. It's not that they don't want out of the web of this entanglement and kids don't want out of this. But we obviously need to take some steps to eliminate the possibility, if roughly 90% say, I don't want to be doing this, but I'm still doing it anyway, then we have to eliminate the possibility. And so make it a family rule to have protective software on every computer, every phone, and every device. And hopefully the less devices you have, the less overwhelming that will feel. But thankfully, there are some pretty easy things you can do to protect your family and your household. There's tons of software and programs out there. We've seen big success with many of these programs. And, you know, we've tried to narrow down dozens here. The list is always changing, so it's less about the list and more just you knowing that they're out there and finding recommendations. There's a little bit of a learning curve with them, but once you get familiar, obviously it's worth the invested time, right? If you need to spend a whole day of your life to learn how to use a software to protect your family, and that saves your family from years and years of heartache, it's worth it, don't you think? An 8-hour day to do that. So it won't work perfectly at first. You will sometimes have to continually tweak because you'll find that, oh, that didn't quite work the way we wanted it to. It might block sites you need. Like sometimes on some of my devices, you know, like it blocks Oceanside Community Church. And I'm like, hey, Hannah, I don't think whatever filter you put on that is working quite, you know, because it flags it as religion or something like that, right? And so, but you can go in there, and these tools are fantastic. They're very specific, and you can say exactly what you will and won't allow for your kids and for your students. Often this even comes, like it does here, like on the church Wi-Fi, often it even comes with just your Wi-Fi provider. You might not know you have it, but there's actually access in there where you can tell it what kind of things, you know, people can and can't do on your Wi-Fi or different kinds of things.
So I'll give you some examples of what you can do, and then I'll kind of go down to like maybe the cheaper options. It is very possible that you will have to pay for something. I know that sounds like a lot. You know, there might be a $5 a month fee or $9 a month fee or whatever it is. Some of these apps are so good that you really get what you pay for. So something like Disney's Circle or Custodio or that kind of thing, you might really need that because once you get past one device, you end up having to pay for it. But basically, at that point on your phone, you should be able to see everyone's web history. You should be able to put time limits on their devices. You should be able to block certain things or block certain apps, or even get to the point, which I know sounds crazy, but is helpful, of reading their text messages and those kinds of things. So all of these have the ability. There are many, many different software recommendations out there that can do those kinds of things, and you might have to pay for it. If you perhaps are just like, your kids are so little, you just want to make sure that they're okay, but you're at the point in their life where you're keeping an eye on them like every second basically anyway, you might be able to do something that's free. So for example, I have a free account with Custodio, and I can still do a lot of things. That's one example on your website or on your handout. But I can only monitor one device. So that's a limit. If I want to monitor more, then I end up paying for it, and that's okay too. But you might find you're already paying for like internet security, like we're paying for Kaspersky, and it has like parent filtering on there. So you can use that to do what you want to do. Or maybe even your something else that you have might be able to have that ability. But I do think if it's, you know, if you have multiple devices and you can't keep an eye on them at all points, it's worth considering paying for it monthly.
Yeah, this is, I mean, fortunately for parents and households, this has become way more standard over the last 10 years. When Hannah and I first started teaching this workshop about 10 years ago, and we majorly revamped it 3 years ago, and even then it starts to feel dated after 3 years because technology changes so fast, there was actually very little out there. And it didn't come standard with your internet provider where you could go in and check all the boxes and we would walk everybody through on the screen how to do these things and stuff. That's become less necessary because they're quite easy to use. At the very least, having something, this is so easy, having something where it just makes sure your kids can't be on their phone between, I mean, you figure out the hours, but where the phone just immediately shuts off and is locked at 10 p.m., because you should know, you probably know that you don't want your kid on their phone after a certain hour, right? And, you know, maybe you don't let your kids take their phone in their bedroom, but even if you have it on the living room, technically they could come out late at night and get on their phone or whatever. That's a pretty easy one to do, and I'm telling you, it takes about 10 seconds. It looks like a you know, Google Calendar grid or whatever, and you just block out 9 p.m., 9 p.m., you drag it down, and it just means all of a sudden they won't have access to that device between those times without you overriding it for that. So that's quite easy to do, but then it can get, of course, more complex than that. And you just have to kind of figure that out, what works for your family, because you can do things like ban social media networks through some of these things, or at least at certain times. You can ban YouTube or, you know, TikTok or whatever it might be. And I think viewing internet activity is pretty easy and pretty basic. And so definitely, you know, do that on a regular basis and, making sure, because people can clear their activity logs and things like that, so making sure you have access to that. Obviously, on your TVs, hopefully you at least have pins set or whatever, so kids couldn't get into certain shows and that sort of thing, so that should be fairly standard. There's a lot of things, I realize it gets complicated, there's a lot of things, like if you're blocking certain things on your router, well, if your kid has a data plan on their phone, of course they can shut off their internet and start using their data. So, like, you just have to be aware. Kids are going to be smart, and they're going to figure things out. But some of these programs will just, like I said, lock the device, period, at a certain time, whether on internet or data or whatever it might be. Some games, if your kids are into gaming, and I know gaming is a really, really big deal. Personally, I've never been a gamer, but there are filters on games. Some have them, some don't. Part of the problem is almost all of them have voice chat, which you obviously can't filter, and a lot of the language on these gaming things where kids are talking is quite bad. And so you kind of have to figure that out. So having a rule where you can only game in public spaces, where you're going to be able to hear what's going on, or maybe only at certain times, or only gaming when you're home. Because lots of these things can become inappropriate quite fast, because your kid could be gaming with some 42-year-old or something like that, right? And we don't really know who they are. So lastly, on your for this point, on your handout, there is this, and I'm sure it's dated by now because I didn't update it this year, because I just didn't have time, because it takes a lot of research to keep up on these things. But I kept it in there, this list of apps, just to help you remember that, of course, this is a battle between good and evil, and there are companies doing a lot of good, and then there are companies who are doing a lot of evil who now create things that can bypass through these kind of apps, all these filters. So here's one word of advice. You should probably look at every single app that would be on your kid's phone and ask questions about what is it, what is it for, what does it do, is it necessary? Or Google it and find out what this app is all about. Because a lot of these apps are not innocent. They might look innocent, have a picture of a smiling monkey on the icon, but they're not innocent. Some of them are quite evil.
Yeah, so we're going to take some time for questions here. We might have a few closing things to say as well. But just a note before that, if your kid is already, and this is common for many kids, as you've heard, if your kid is already experiencing some addiction, they may need something more than just blocking. Because when you are in an addiction, whether it's drugs or whatever, you're going to do whatever it takes to find it. And there are ways, if you are addicted to pornography, and there's different levels of addiction, there are ways to bypass basically everything. But you would have to really want it and really have to try. So just keeping that in mind, that like, it's not going to solve everything. It's going to help make it easier, like taking the alcohol out of your house or whatever it is to bypass addiction. But you can always talk to us, and there are other ways to help as well.